Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? And no, it's not hump day, but it is Third Thursday, which is Tech Thursday on G's Power Hour with the man himself, the tech guru, Mr. Burton Kelso of Integral. Good morning. How are you?
I'm freezing. It's 11 degrees where we are.
Oh, let's see. Good. Last, I think it was 77 or something here. Anyway, we're supposed to get there, so come on down.
I need to get out of this cold and get into the sunshine, right?
Yes, yes. And if you decide to make it long term, remember, I'm a realtor.
That's right. I love that.
So we wanted to kind of do a little bit of this and that today, you know, being that it's Black History Month, we wanted to talk a little Black history and tech. And I had some questions with regards to tech and discrimination, so we're going to try to touch on that a little bit too. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about Black history. In fact, Burton has pulled together some information. I've posted it on G's Power Hour Facebook page, but I'm going to let you go ahead and get started, Burton. You had any particular inspirations when it comes to Black history and technology?
Well, I would say probably myself and the fact of Blacks and technology in general, that it's definitely an underrepresented field as far as tech is concerned, because it's a white male-dominated industry, and it has been for a long time. And as history has shown, many of the white innovators have definitely gotten their accolades. But and we'll talk about this trio here in a minute. But you know, as evidenced by Hidden Figures, you can see that the white scientists were the ones that got credited for getting men in outer space and to the moon and back. And I actually, you know, there is some African-American talent behind that. But just, you know, even in my industry and just dealing with my day-to-day business, you know, they're not necessarily discrimination, but at the same time, the old adage in any form of business applies to people do business with people that they know, like, and trust. So with that said, if you, you know, because based on the skin of your color that people don't find you trustworthy, then they're not going to see that you're going to be confident in your field, especially in tech. So, you know, this month's episode really, you know, plays a special part with me because, you know, I won't say that I'm a tech innovator, but I've been in business for 27 years, and I've definitely seen where more people will go to my competition than me based, you know, on the color of my skin. So it's interesting to see that in history and with the Black tech innovators that we're going to talk about, that, you know, obviously history has on their side up until recently. So with that said, it, you know, that is kind of my inspiration as far as, you know, looking towards some of these innovators, because a lot of tech stuff has been actually invented by African American people, and it's just now coming to light, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you touched on Hidden Figures. You're talking about Mary Jackson, Katherine Johnson, and Dorothy Vaughan, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Obviously, the movie took some liberties because I don't think that they were that closely connected. But they were all part of the human-computer program and all played a role, a major role, as far as getting men into space and getting men to the moon and back. You know, and just now they're getting their recognition. I mean, because that's not the stuff that we learned in school, obviously.
No, at all. No, seriously.
That's not the stuff we learned in school. So, I mean, it's good that, you know, that African Americans are starting to get their recognition, especially in tech, because obviously we're in a digital world and we're driven by tech. And I think the importance of that being highlighted is the simple fact that our young black youth can start to get involved in STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math studies in order for them to have successful careers in the tech industry too. Because, I mean, it's a pretty lucrative industry to get into, technology is, or any any tech, and it doesn't have to be computer related, but just any tech. I mean, tech's not going away. So if we can start to encourage our young black youth or brown youth or whatever, it's going to be a good thing.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And some of them are you're seeing, especially in the wake of COVID, you're seeing a lot of the creativity come out in tech. In science right now, people are needing, especially young people are needing to find ways to channel that creativity, and so it's coming out in different types of innovative ways.
One of the things that I was having a conversation with another black gentleman, and we were talking about technology, and I think the challenge with tech as far as the creativity is that when, and obviously this isn't for all African Americans, but for the most part, when African Americans interact with technology, for the most part, it's more of an entertainment and an escape because of the harsh realities that, you know, they have to deal with, whereas their white counterparts don't necessarily have to worry about things such as, there's life situations that they have to deal with, but they're in a more comfortable environment. And so when you're comfortable and your basic needs are met, it definitely opens up that door for creativity to occur. So that's another reason why, you know, there are some innovators, black innovators in tech, but obviously, there should be more. And obviously, if basic needs are met, then, you know, obviously you'll start to see some more of that black tech innovation occur.
So tell us who's on your list for today.
Well, you already spoiled it and named out my top three.
Well, you have such a long list. I was just trying to just dive right in because we got other stuff to talk about, too. This conversation is going to get a little dicey toward the end, probably. But anyway,
We've already talked about the hidden figures, but we can talk about Alan M. Archie, which is basically the world's first internet search engine. So just to kind of put things into play, if it hadn't been for Alan, there'd be no such thing as Google. Let me go back a step. There wouldn't be anything such as Yahoo, because that was really one of the first major search engines to occur on the internet. But obviously, Yahoo evolved into Google, and we're not saying that Alan created Google in this image where they're stealing information, but just the basic algorithm of creating a search engine where if you wanted to look up stuff on the World Wide Web, that's what Archie was designed to do, was look up information on the web. And that's a good thing, because if we didn't have Archie or Alan, then obviously, you know, we wouldn't be able to search and find the things that we need to find on the internet.
Okay, and it's interesting because I don't think I've heard of RG, or if I did, it's been a while and not frequent at all.
Well, yeah, because obviously, and it's like several of the vendors on here, you're like, well, wow, I never heard of that product. But
mm-hmm.
then, you know, people saw it and said, oh, well, heck, you know, we need to use this. This doesn't have to do with African-Americans, but just kind of the way technology works is that the graphical user interface that we use was liberated by Steve Jobs from a Texas Instruments employee, which, you know, and obviously Jobs used that to create Apple, and then Bill Gates saw what Jobs did and then created Windows. So, I mean, that's kind of the way it works in the tech space. Somebody sees something great and sees where they can go for it. They have the resources to make it happen, and so they take it to the next level and get all the credit.
That's true.
So,
that's true.
Yeah, you're going to see that. So, yeah,
yeah.
Our next inventor or African-American tech innovator is Marie Van Britten Brown, which basically created modern surveillance system. So those cameras that you see up at the mall and out and about, she was the one that kind of started that process. Now, hers was a little antiquated because she used combinations of peepholes and mirrors and monitors and even had an alarm button. So her peep on somebody, and then if you saw something happen, you could hit the alarm button and alert whoever that there was somebody snooping where they shouldn't have been. But obviously someone gathered that piece of technology and converted into the camera systems that we have today. So if you've got Ring, or if you've got Blink camera systems or any of those camera systems, you can thank Marie for that, because if it hadn't have been for her, we wouldn't have any of that innovation right now.
All right, Marie. Go ahead, Marie. Thank you, Marie.
You
I wish Marie was here right now to help my computer get unstuck, but that's okay.
So our next innovator is Mark Dean, who on some of these, I should have marked if they're living or not, but Mark worked at IBM, and he was one of the ones that kind of was on that team that helped IBM get the first personal computer going. Because before that, it was more or less you bought a bunch of computer parts and you built your own computer. But Mark helped put together the personal computer. So if you're in front of a computer or even a laptop, you'd have to thank Mark Dean, because he was on that IBM team that helped revolutionize the home computer or even the office computer, because that was IBM's first target, was businesses.
Okay.
So next is Etta Falconer. And she was a mathematician, and she became the first Black woman to earn a master's degree in computer science.
Wow. Go ahead, girl.
Yeah, but that didn't occur until 1982, and obviously we knew that there was people out there that could get a degree in computer science. But, yeah, she was one of the first Black women to get a master's in computer science.
So what – is it, okay, from what you can tell, is it us, or is it, what forces, I guess you could say, are the catalyst for some, but are the ones that kind of prohibit or inhibit other people from going forward and making their mark in the sciences?
That's a good question. That's one I can't answer. I think some people see others and they think, well, why not me, you know? So I think that's,
mm-hmm.
that's part of the push for people to make that happen, you know. That's not to say that everyone doesn't have that drive, but at the same time, you know, I think some people have a little bit more drive as far as making, as far as achieving that is considered unachievable.
Okay. Because I know, I think about actually in my earlier years that I was, you know, I was pretty good in math, and I did in earlier years have kind of a love for science and stuff in a way, and then I got away from it. I really didn't kind of, I think, want to get my hands really dirty in some of the sciences. Like, I wasn't big on the dissecting stuff so much. But, I mean, there's so many different areas to go into, so, you know, in terms of, you know, like, technology doesn't necessarily require dissecting frogs, but it, you know, it does require a lot of, you know, skill, a lot of focus, a lot of diligence and patience and stuff like that. And so, you know, and I think part of the problem, I think, is also too visibility. You see the athletes, you see the actors and actresses, you see the comedians. So you see the people that are in the arts a little bit more than the people that are in the sciences, because they're more behind the scenes.
Right. Well, it depends. Elon Musk is in the sciences, and he's definitely not a behind the scenes person. So.
Yeah, yeah, but
so,
you know, like I think
we're
seeing more now. I think it's getting more exposure now, especially when technology has become so much a part of our day to day, so widely used. You know, I mean, you know, we especially, you know, I guess from the start of radio and TV, and then into computers now, and it's kind of everything. Smart homes now, some of them way too smart. but.
The next one is Jerry Lawson, who helped create basically the video game cartridge. So the story about Jerry is that he created a video game system called, I think it was called the F-Con, but it was basically the F stood for Fairchild. But anyway, he created a gaming system back in the late 70s that used interchangeable cartridges. And so before that happened, gaming systems, you just bought the entire game system and it only had one game on it. So I don't know if you remember the old Pong console that Atari had. I mean, when you bought Pong, you bought that console, you only had one game on there, and that was Pong. But Jerry came up with the idea. Yeah, so if you wanted a new game, you'd have to buy a new console. But Jerry, with his Fairchild, came up with the idea of having interchangeable cartridges, so that rather than one, if you bought a console, rather than just having one game, you could stick in a cartridge and play any game you want. So Jerry's Fairchild gaming system did not sell well, but obviously Atari and some of the other gaming people in the industry saw his concept and just took it and ran with it. And so now that's why you have gaming systems like Nintendo, Xbox, and PlayStations, where you can interchange your games out. Now, obviously,
right,
when Jerry did his gaming system, they were on cartridges. And, of course, we've evolved from cartridges to CDs. And I think on a Nintendo Switch, you still have cartridges. But none of that would be possible without Jerry Lawson.
So, and I, you know, I'm not a big gamer. I mean, the most I've done is probably, at least when you used to be able to go to a movie theater and they had like a you know, video game or something off to the side or whatever, and I was a Galaga fan, I guess. That's kind of the it for me. But I, you know, for various reasons, I've gone into stores and I've had to look and browse at the different gaming systems. So help me understand something when it comes to gaming systems. Why is it that, like you said, you have PlayStation and you have Nintendo, you'll have the same game, but it seems like it's on a different system, and why do you need different systems, and why can't you play, like, one game on all of the systems? Like I said, this is where my ignorance comes in, because I don't play. It just seems odd to me that you have, like, okay, you have a game, but you have to make it up for this system and that system and another system, and it looks like you could it would be just one consistent system that you could play all of the games on.
Right, and that's kind of the beauty of what Jerry did, is when he opened it up and made it a cartridge-based system, he allowed different companies to just manufacture games and not have to come up with a gaming system. Like back in, well, even now, Activision was a company, and all they made were video game cartridges that would work on both the Atari and the Intellivision and ColecoVision. So that's all they did, was just make games for these gaming systems. But as far as the gaming systems themselves, you have to think about it as like people who buy Windows computer versus buying Apple computers, or who buy Android phones versus Apple phones. Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft have all created branding and brand loyalty with their gaming systems. So that's why you have people that go out and get PlayStations or Xboxes or Nintendo Switches, because these companies have created branding where people are fans of those systems, and that's the only thing that they are going to play. But the people who make the games...
Is there that much difference between the systems?
Not that you or I would notice. Now, some have better video or audio than the others, but at the same time, the goal of the people that make the games is to create a game that's going to be its own brand and obviously make it available on any system. But some of the gaming companies have gotten so smart that they create games that you can only get on that system. Like, for example, Mario and Donkey Kong, that's a Nintendo-only game, and you can only play it on a Nintendo device. So if you had a PlayStation, obviously you can't play Mario unless you buy a Nintendo unit. So Jerry, in creating the cartridge, he just created a whole new industry as far as the video game system are concerned. And I mean, now it's a multi-billion-dollar industry based on the fact of, you know, the whole cartridge situation,
which was started by Jerry Lawson.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Him coming up with the idea of, well, if I'm going to sell a game system, I'm going to make it so that people could play multiple games on that game system and not just one.
And then next you have Miss Patricia Bath. Tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, she is basically an ophthalmologist, and other than the accolades of being the first black woman to serve as staff surgeon at UCLA, and she co-founded the American Institute for Prevention of Blindness, she created the machine that created the removal of cataracts via laser surgery. Because, you know, in the old days, if you had cataracts, you had to go under the razor.
Yeah.
But she perfected the technique of using a laser to remove cataracts from, from eyeballs.
Okay. Good to know. Because I might have to look at some of that down the road myself.
I was going to say, at least if you do have to have cataract surgery, you won't have to worry about someone taking a razor to your eyeball.
Right.
Remove the cataract.
Yeah, because I think cataracts just had to still be there. I would have been having to learn Braille really quickly, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
So, the next person is James West, who created the electric microphone, which is used in all sorts of tech devices today. So if you've got a Yeti mic, if you've got your cell phone, your webcam, he's the one that created the technology to enable the microphone to work the way it should with webinars and all that other stuff. And even, right now.
Wow.
Because I'm talking to you on my cell phone.
Right. Exactly. We're all talking to each other and Zooming with each other. I see you say that he won the Benjamin Franklin Medal in Electrical Engineering in 2010.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he was a pretty he was, you know, pretty smart guy. I mean, I couldn't even begin to think about, well, yeah, I need to make this electric microphone to work better and have it evolve so that, you know, that's the technology we're using as far as webcams and smartphones and all that today.
And then Roy Clay Sr. you have here, who helped HP or Hewlett Packard, as it was formerly known, get into the PC market. How did that happen?
Just the simple fact, when IBM was starting to get into the market, obviously HP decided that they needed to diversify their business. So Roy Clay was on the team to help develop PCs for Hewlett Packard. So obviously most people aren't using Hewlett Packard. Well, I take that back. I'm thinking of Compaq. But yeah, we are still using HP computers today. But HP wasn't in the PC market. HP, and I forget what they started out as, but they weren't a computer company. But it was just over the course of time that they decided that they needed to get into the PC market. So Roy Clay was the one that that started that. And HP started out as a printer company.
Okay. So yeah, I have an HP off.
You got
an
HP everything.
Yet. No, I actually don't. It's just my not that I know of. I'll just put it that way. I have a lot of Samsung stuff, but that's another story. I'm on my second HP. Printer, I guess you could say office jet all in one, and I love them. I don't even look for anything else, and they work pretty well, and I keep them for a while. So I have I think I'm in an 8600 series, you know, and not really having an issue. So I love them.
Yeah,
but anyway,
a lot of people love their HP stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. And of course, the minute I say that I love it, and I'm not having a problem, all the kind of stuff. You know how that goes. So
that's funny.
Just my mouth shut.
Right.
Okay. But anyway, thanks for that rundown. And I'm actually going to, when I get an opportunity, maybe I'll do it this weekend, just go down your list and pull other information on these people and post it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, because I think we should know more about them and you know, just very grateful for their contributions. But when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit about technology and racism. Discrimination. We're going to talk a little bit about that and how that may or may not be playing out. So we are here with Burton Kelso of Integral. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Burton, the number is 516-387-1944. G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Hello, welcome back to G Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. We are here with Mr. Burton Kelso's Tech Thursday, the third Thursday of the month on G's Power Hour. And I thank you, Burton, for that list of people that made their contributions from the black community to technology. But now I want to ask you, and I actually was just going to originally focus on black history, but I do need to also talk a little bit or inquire about tech being used to discriminate and what, you know, how can it be used? Has it been used? And the things that we need to look out for. And I guess one of the reasons that I really started thinking about this in the last few days was I had an experience online where I was looking up a piece of furniture or two that I was considering purchasing. And, you know, how they say some things, you know, they have in the store, some things they don't. And so I was trying to find out more information on it. And so when it asked me, the site that I was looking at asked me to put in my zip code. And then when I put in my zip code, then it seemed like all of a sudden the item was not available anymore, or it wasn't available to ship, or it was something that was just, it seemed kind of odd. Now, you know, I work and have worked in the past for, you know, companies where, you know, I guess they have stock regionally or whatever and may or not, I guess, ship them different places. But what I wanted to find out just, you know, specifically, what do you know or about the usage or possible usage of technology and then racism?
Well, the thing that obviously drives it is the algorithms that are set up by different websites and obviously on social media. But I found a great article on the internet by Dominic Harrison who kind of breaks down the four different ways where technology is using to discriminate brown folks. And so before we delve into that, it's important to note that when tech companies set up algorithms, the main purpose is to find either ways to get advertising products to you or for companies to find viable customers for their product. And unfortunately, that can turn into discrimination because it's equated up the algorithms that, you know, you're looking for people who are in affluent zip codes or affluent areas or even, you know, your stereotypes. So it's not like the technology itself is discriminating. Obviously, it's the people behind the technology that are making that happen. So the four different areas where it can occur is, number one would be voter suppression and racial targeting. And obviously, with the 15th Amendment and the Voting Rights Act of 65, you legally can't prevent people from voting based on race, color, gender, et cetera, et cetera. But during the 2016 election, Russia obviously attempted to influence it, and they were able to discourage black voters from going out and voting by using voter suppression tactics on all of the social media platforms. So, it, you know, when you talk about the Russian hacking, it doesn't necessarily mean that they were able to hack into different devices. They were able to use the algorithm that are built into the social media networks in order to discourage people from getting out and voting. And so obviously, you know, you don't want to see that occur into our society at all. And I think that's why you've seen such a change as far as voter turnout in the 2020 election as opposed to the 2016 election. I mean, obviously social media platforms had to shut down anything political and just make it so that everyone would have a good opportunity to vote and weren't discouraged by some of the things that they were seeing online.
Okay. You know, I'm already kind of, I guess you could say, bent out of shape a little bit by what I see in terms of like certain companies creating a black hole, almost literally, in terms of not entering into African American communities, not serving them, and then we're still we're still spending our money with these companies going out of our neighborhoods. You know, if you're living in a predominantly black neighborhood, you know, and there's not a certain grocery store, a certain furniture store, or a certain gas station or whatever in that community, and having to spend money buying expensive gas because the most expensive gas is in the black neighborhood, or so it seems, and then drive out of the neighborhood to go spend your money for stuff that you need, you know, or paying extra to have stuff delivered in your neighborhood.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously, geography plays a big part in how a lot of these algorithms are programmed, because the zip code is assumed not to be an affluent neighborhood, then, you know, rather than boots on the ground research, which probably needs to really occur to find out if these neighborhoods are viable or not viable. Companies are just relying on technology to do that. And in the process, you know, obviously people are discriminated against because they're not getting the resources that they should be able to have access to. And yeah, it plays a big part. And, you know, if there's a grocery store that's not available in the neighborhood, or like you said, the price of gas. So, but obviously that needs to change. And I think tech companies need to stop relying on algorithms as much as just going out and doing research. Because I don't know if I think companies still do it, but, you know, they would send a person out to, remember the surveys that used to come out? You know, you'd be walking at the mall or at the gas station, and someone would saunter up to you to ask you questions, and they would just manually collect that data. But now it's just based on assumption, and it's being based and used by people that don't have any connection to that neighborhood. It's just, you know, it's just all assumption. And I mean, that obviously needs to stop. Or what needs to happen is that more people of color need to be involved in the algorithm or the programming process to add their experience to the data that the computers and technology is pulling out.
Right.
That
makes perfect sense, because I have often said that you need to, when you're talking about, let's say, creating diversity in a certain environment, it needs to be more not just about numbers, not just about how many people of a certain ethnicity that you hire, but where are they placed inside the company? You know, are they in the decision-making processes, you know, or on that level? Because if they're not, you're just, to me, in some cases, giving lip service.
Right. I think obviously, if you've got a diverse team, it definitely helps build up how your company works and able to serve your customers. I mean, we've seen that in all businesses. You know, in technology, it's still a people-driven business. I don't care what area of tech you're in. I mean, there's going to be people involved, and you could definitely miss a larger piece of the pie if you don't have a diverse team that allows you to see how you can, I guess, personally target people in order to buy your product or service, because you could be missing out on a whole demographic just because you go based on the assumption of the data is out there. Because African Americans are great purchasers of product. And I think that's missed out. That's missed out quite a bit. And there are companies out there that are losing money because they're not doing their due diligence. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, you were talking about people needing to go out and really find out what's going on. I think what happens is that they take the information that says, well, the income ratio and then wages and stuff don't necessarily match up between whites and blacks. That doesn't mean that we're not spending whatever it is that we have. We may not have as much, But because we don't have as much, we are very careful in terms of how we spend our money. And
right.
therefore, you need to find out, if you want our money, you need to find out where we're spending it and how we're spending it. And then us as African Americans, I think, need to be more discriminating in terms of where and how we spend our money, make sure that we're spending our money in places where people appreciate our hard-earned dollars, you know, not just throwing it away.
I agree completely. Now, one of the funny things that I saw on the internet as far as discrimination is concerned is that they were talking to a white male who was trying to, and this gets back to the whole voter suppression thing, why African Americans were voting, and the guy made the assumption that, well, because, you know, a lot of African Americans out there don't have a form of identification to show that they can vote. So they actually put boots on the ground in a predominantly black neighborhood and went around asking people, do you have any ID? Of course, people were right and left were pulling out their driver's license or their personal IDs, which kind of debunked the whole message of this individual that was saying that blacks weren't voting because they didn't have any form of identification. Whereas when they actually went out and interviewed people, everyone they encountered, oh yeah, I got my driver's license right here. You know,
I was going to say if anybody has ID or should have ID, it's African Americans, because we get pulled or stopped so many times for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to come correct. You have to have ID, or you know, so if anybody has it, we have it more so than anybody else, just by virtue of just trying to get along day to day and not. If you don't have it, that's, you know, shame on you for not having it.
Right. Yeah, the second thing that I was going to bring up was just the bias and. We talked about the algorithms, but they affect, you know, housing and employment and even loans.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously in your industry, you've seen the whole scenario play out where the black couple owns a house and it's underappraised. But when they rearrange the same house and looks like it's a white couple there, then obviously the appraisal value goes up. But target advertising works the same way as far as employment and housing and loans. I mean, if you know, let's say you're searching with this within a specific GPS area, it will only limit the loan and housing opportunities in your area, as opposed to if you were some outside of your GPS. And don't think that your GPS information isn't being pulled by your internet service provider and by other websites too. I mean, they're specifically set up so that they can get more of an affluent target. And that stretches out more racially, because I think one of the things that they tell people when they're searching for airline tickets online, that you definitely want to clear out your cookies and revisit the website or make sure that you're using a VPN to search the airline websites, because if you go back multiple times, or even it used to be if you were searching from a Macintosh computer, your rates would be higher. So you can't tell me that algorithms aren't being used to segregate or discriminate against people, because that's just the tech behind websites and search engines and even social media. I mean, the whole goal is to set it up so that they can get money for more affluent people. But unfortunately, African Americans are left in the wake, and we miss out on opportunities based on, you know, corporate algorithms.
So, okay, let me ask you, so what's the answer? How do we – you're probably not going to – obviously not going to get rid of it totally, but is this a matter of just withholding information in order to get more information? If you understand what I'm saying,
because if you're going to like a housing website or let's say an employment website, and your GPS is and your IP is pointing that you're in a neighborhood that's considered predominantly African American or not as affluent, then the algorithm's automatically going to suppress that information. So the only way to defeat that would be to log into the same website from a VPN, which is a virtual private network. So the quickest and easiest way for the non-tech person would be to download the web browser Opera, because it has a VPN built into it where you can just hit a switch and a VPN will mask your IP address and will open up more opportunities for you. But also, the other thing that you have to watch out for in browsers are your cookies. So if you, let's just say you've searched for items, music, shopped for things that show that you're African American, then that your cookies could be used against you too when you go to a more affluent website and may not offer those opportunities there. So in that instance, you could search the web or surf the web in what's called in private or in incognito mode to kind of block that information that's being put out about you. Because remember, if you're doing a search of what's about you that's already in the system, so like if you went and try to apply for a loan someplace, I mean, they're pulling that from like your credit bureau. But if you're just searching out of the blue, then definitely the social media search engine algorithms can play a big part in suppressing information, because it's pulling data based on the information that's in your browser and the information that's coming from your GPS coordinates.
So, and I wonder too, when you're talking about GPS coordinates and everything, the other thing I wonder about is, like, for example, when I've gone in my computer and then they kind of, let's say, says we'll search for items in zip code ... and I notice that it's not my zip code, but they've pulled it, let's say, from another zip code, and I have to go in and change the zip code, and then when I change the zip code, some of the information changes. And it's like, no, I still want the information from the zip code that you originally had on there, but that's not my zip code. So I don't want you to change necessarily. I mean, maybe add information if you need to, but I don't want you to necessarily take away information, you know, because you may be taking away the actual information that I'm looking for.
Yeah, part of that is the information from your internet service provider. So it's not always accurate as far as the zip code is concerned, because they cover such a wide area as far as where they're providing service. And sometimes you'll see that with your cell phone too. It may say that you're in one city, but you're actually in another. And that that isn't necessarily a discrimination tactic. That's just the fact of the technology set up where your internet provider is saying, well, we're going to say everyone in this area is from this zip code. And the website's just misinterpreting that information. But, you know, back to the whole discrimination thing, even if you're near that certain zip code or your IP address is pulling up from a certain area, then the algorithm built into websites and to social media could could make certain assumptions about you. So like I said, the best way to kind of keep your identity neutral online is to either surf the web via a VPN or in private or incognito mode. So at least your personal profile is not being analyzed by websites in order for you to get a equal experience when online.
I did find the article from Dominique Harris, and I did post it on the G's Power Hour Facebook page, by the way. So thank you for that. I appreciate that.
No problem.
So,
but yeah, the other areas people have to worry about too is school placement, because of the algorithms in that, because obviously because of Brown versus the Board of Education, you know, you can't be discriminated as far as education is concerned. But also, too, you have to look at as far as law enforcement. The algorithms are set up there, too, to say that specific areas are high crime when they may not be, because someone programmed it into their systems that these areas are high crime and can cause issues. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of discriminatory practices that are being used in technology. But like I said, there are a couple of ways that you can kind of prevent that from happening, at least on your end. But as far as the data on the other end, it's kind of hard to make that happen until we make changes and get more people of color in tech that are able to help discern some of that discrimination that's going on.
Right. I mean, there's so many things I want to ask you. I want to go back, though, to the whole thing with cookies, because it almost seems to get information, and maybe I need to look into Opera, but, you know, because I have not done Opera, so many things that I encounter, Chrome, you know, and supposedly it's safe. I use Google Chrome a lot, but I may have to switch up. But I wanted to ask about cookies, and there are certain sites that will only let you go so far unless you enable cookies. So how do you get around it? You know, when are cookies good and when are cookies not good?
Well, cookies themselves are neutral. Basically, it's the information that's gathered or that's put into your browser whenever you visit a website. So probably 10 or 15 years ago, your cookies were, well, when the internet was created, your cookies were put in your browser to help that website come up quicker when you revisited the site. But someone along the way figured out, well, if we design a website that can analyze cookies, and we can get data on people and kind of find out what their shopping habits are and just target items they love to them. So whenever you get on Facebook or other places and you start to see targeted ads of places that you've done a search for, that's because of the cookies in your browser. Now, all browsers, because the big tech companies that are kind of separate from the search engine companies, you can surf in what's called incognito mode, which in Chrome, it's just a matter of going to the menu on the right-hand side, and then it'll ask you, once you click on that menu, you can open up a new incognito window. And once you've gone in incognito, then your web data and your cookies aren't saved to your browser. So you can safely go from website to website and know that the websites that you are visiting aren't getting in any information, because incognito mode doesn't save your cookies. So it helps stop those targeted ads. It makes you a little bit more anonymous on the internet. So if you go to the website and it asks about, then you can tell it, yeah, I want to, you can load cookies on my computer, because it ain't going to save them if I leave a site. And as far as sites asking to accept cookies, they're letting you know they have to put that now because of the law, that if they're just saying, well, we need cookies for this website to work properly, or we're going to use your cookies to find out where you've been on the internet.
It seems that there are some sites that kind of, if you decide that you're not going to enable your cookies, then they're not going to, they're going to limit the information they give to you.
Right. And part of that is the website is just designed to work with cookies. The other part is that, well, the main purpose of the site is to get your information, so they're just not going to provide that much information to you.
So,
moving forward, whenever you visit a website, if that message pops up about cookies, obviously you should read it. But if you are surfing the web in incognito mode, it doesn't really matter if the cookie message pops up or not, because your information is not going to be shared whenever you surf the web.
Okay. All right. So,
now you can go back to that website in incognito mode that you went to, or with your VPN turned on, to see if the couch you wanted was available.
Okay. All right. So what else should we be, I guess, cautious about or wary about when it comes to technology and discrimination?
Well, I mean, you know, as far as I think it all boils down to the whole privacy thing. On my website, burtonkelso.com, I've got several articles that have written for people who want to kind of keep a lower footprint on the internet. I mean, that will help, but at the same time, I think it's just awareness, knowing that, you know, there's algorithms out there that can discriminate against. I think, you know, it boils down to the whole knowledge is power thing. So there is some things that you can do, but ultimately the whole industry is going to have to change in order to help prevent discrimination via technology from occurring.
Are there any, I guess you could say, watchdogs for this type of thing, any type of groups or organizations looking into this?
Not to my knowledge, because it's kind of like the whole, I'm sure you'll see that happen, but it's kind of like the whole, we're just now aware of how deep algorithms play into the internet, you know. And again, there's watchdogs as far as wouldn't have had the documentary, The Social Dilemma. But again, these were tech giants of, you know, white tech giants. So obviously they're like, well, yeah, we need to alert people. But since technology is such a white male-dominated industry, you haven't seen anything as far as watchdog groups, you know, geared to help protect African Americans. And that's not to say that it won't occur. It may be a slower process because, like, you know, because tech is so white dominated.
Do you think it's needed?
I think so, yeah, because obviously you can't be discriminated against in any form or fashion. I mean, there's laws, federal laws, that prevent that from happening. So, yeah, it definitely needs to occur, because the internet is supposed to be the great equator. I mean, that it's not, you know, you shouldn't be discriminated on the internet. I mean, you should be able to have access to the same information that everyone else has access to. So, I mean, yeah, it definitely needs to happen.
Yeah. Well, thank you for this discussion. See, you thought I've just been paranoid for no reason, but in some cases, it's like I had every right to be.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are certain things that you can go about, but yeah, definitely big tech is watching and making things happen. So obviously, someone has to get involved in order to make sure that everyone has a free and equal internet. Because, I mean, that was the whole purpose of the internet. Just to put information out there for people to find out about stuff. So it needs to be free for everybody.
For sure. So, Mr. Kelso, how do people find you? How do they contact you? How can they get your help?
Oh, I'm on all the forms of social media, so just look for Burton Kelso on all the social media platforms out there. And there you can go to my website, burtonkelso.com.
See, he's not shy about the internet at all, because
right.
He knows what he's doing. So, but anyway, thank you so much. I appreciate the conversation. And maybe we need to get you into to form one of those watchdog groups, Burton. Maybe
probably
something you might want to think about.
Got to find the time to do it, though.
yeah, that's true. I understand that. Have a blessed day, man.
Thank you.
All right. And thank you all for listening. Tomorrow is Friday in the Garden with Mr. Robert Boughton of Harry P. Lew Gardens here in Central Florida. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had This Good Entertainment. Be well, be safe, be blessed, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.
make it all right.
Right,
I know.